Hello, my name is Jess Lindley, and this is Arthur's Heroes, the podcast from Arthur's Place, the magazine and social network for young adults with arthritis. You can find us at arthursplace.co.uk and follow Arthur's Place on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. This podcast is supported by Novartis UK. We are grateful to Novartis for their support, but they have no influence over the content of the podcast. This week on Arthur's Heroes, we're starting with a question. When you were diagnosed, did you immediately Google your condition? And how did you feel when you were reading? I Googled, and the only consequence was making me feel sad and worried for the future. That's not to say that internet information isn't highly valuable. Arthur's Place in itself is a testament to the power of the internet to unite people for a common good. However, post-diagnosis, a certain amount of resilience is required to remind us that life isn't divided into pre- and post-diagnosis eras, and that we are still the same people we were before the hospital appointment. This week's Arthur's Hero is Jamie. Jamie has, since receiving his diagnosis, proved himself to be extremely resilient. Jamie does not let arthritis get him down, but has channeled his diagnosis into a force for good, not only for himself, but for other people too, selflessly helping arthritis sufferers to find a more positive path. Having been diagnosed in 2016 and made his own journey down the rabbit hole of depressing internet searches, Jamie drew on his resilience to change his mindset. Using his diagnosis and subsequent chance of meeting a yoga fan at an AS support group, Jamie set up Yoga for AS, an organisation designed to show arthritis sufferers how to unlock the power of yoga to develop both their flexibility and their mindset. From down in the dumps to downward dog, Jamie is here today to tell us about his journey and why mindset has been such a crucial factor in overcoming his arthritis diagnosis over the past few years. Jamie, welcome to Arthur's Heroes. If you can excuse the terrible yoga pun, please do tell us more about Yoga for AS.
Pretty terrible yoga pun. It's really lovely to be with you, Jess, and hello to all Arthur's Place listeners. So, yeah, to jump right in, Yoga for AS is an organisation that I set up alongside Jeff about 2 years ago, just in the midst of the pandemic. And we realised very early on, when it comes to any long-term health condition, but especially arthritis, most people with arthritis are told to move, to stretch, to exercise, but rarely is there any guidance on how to find a suitable place to do that and space to do that. And in addition to that, many people go to yoga with arthritis, they try out a session and it puts them into a flare, or it makes things worse, or they feel perhaps a bit humiliated because everyone around them has lots of range of motion and lots of flexibility and they feel stiff and actually disempowered. So our mission is to show people that there is a yoga practice out there that can not only be beneficial, but also enjoyable. And you can really stick to exercise, movement when you enjoy something, and you can build a community around that. So that really is kind of Yoga for AS in a nutshell, but I'm sure we can go more into that.
Absolutely. I mean, it sounds really cool and definitely resonates with me in terms of trying out yoga and then being in more pain the next day than I was before. So how did you decide to set up your yoga business? What was it that made you realise that actually it's a really useful and helpful thing to be doing?
So what drove us to set up Yoga for AS, and it actually stands for ankylosing spondylitis, but many people are actually diagnosed with what's called axial spondyloarthritis, which is an umbrella term for lots of inflammatory forms of arthritis that affect the spine and other areas. So just a side note there for why it's Yoga for AS. We've spent a long time thinking about the name because really it covers more than just AS. But back to your question, we saw a need to set this up because myself and Jeff both realized the power and importance of a yoga practice for arthritis and specifically for
axial spondyloarthritis. We were told very shortly after diagnosis to keep moving, and from speaking to physiotherapists and specialists in the field of rheumatology, they all talk about how important it is to do your best to maintain your range of motion. However, when I would go to a yoga class, usually I was the only person there who was very, very stiff and immobile at the time. A lot of the positions were out of range for me, and it didn't particularly feel like it was targeted to what I needed at the time. I also didn't really understand at the time all the different yoga practices out there, because most yoga that's taught in gyms and studios is this kind of fast flow type yoga, which is more kind of exercise based, more like a workout. And sure, that has its place for people, but that's not really yoga at its core. And the practices that yoga can offer for arthritis can be beyond the physical. They can help to reduce things like fatigue through deep relaxation practices. They can help us to improve our lung capacity, which is important in some forms of arthritis. It can help us to reduce brain fog. So it goes far beyond just the physicalities. And that's why we really saw a need. And the biggest drive was we started doing one-to-ones with people, and they'd come back and say that they're able to get back to the movement they used to enjoy, or they're in less pain, and they've got less stiffness, their quality of life has improved. That gave myself and Jeff a huge drive to say, okay, let's try to scale this, let's try to deliver this to more people.
So you've talked a lot about Jeff, who runs Yoga for AS with you. How did you meet him? What were the kind of circumstances? And at what point did you realise that you had a shared interest in taking this further than just being sort of yoga friends?
Yeah, so the story is really quite cosmic, I would say, because when I was about 18, I was diagnosed. And when I was diagnosed, I went to a support group, and that's where I met Jeff. I was quite reluctant to go to this support group, but Jeff was, in short, in a different position, both physically, but also in terms of how he conducted himself than the other people in the support group. He had a good posture, and at that time I thought this condition meant the posture that I had would deteriorate. I thought that I would be immobile, and he cycled to the group, and after doing some hydrotherapy he did some yoga, and I was just astonished because at the time he was nearly 70. He could, from standing, not only touch his toes, he could put his palms flat on the floor. Now, yoga isn't about being flexible, but it gave me a huge wave of inspiration because I didn't know that people with this condition were able to maintain their movement, maintain their motion, that that is a possibility. For every possibility that people could lose it, there is a possibility, I believe now, and from learning over the years, that people can improve their range of motion. So this was a huge inspiration. And Jeff really inspired me to start yoga. And that's when I went away for years, practiced. It had huge benefits on me. And I trained to become a yoga teacher. And then years later, we started talking about sharing this to the wider community. So it was a kind of full circle, really. Jeff introduced me to the practice, and then we came back together and joined forces, as it were, to share this with the arthritis community, and specifically people with spondyloarthritis.
That sounds like a really inspirational person to have met, and like it's had a really big impact on the way your life has turned out. So you've talked a bit about the benefits that yoga has for the community, and please don't tell anybody that you can still touch your toes, because that's my one excuse for not being able to at the moment. But what benefits does yoga have for you beyond the obvious benefits in terms of flexibility and sort of the physical benefits that you've mentioned?
Just to respond to your comment, you never need to be able to touch your toes to do yoga.
And I'm going to call you out on that, because you can do yoga purely from a chair. You can do yoga without any movement at all. All you need is to be able to breathe and you can practice yoga. And it's only now, after about 7 years of consistent practice, that I'm able to comfortably touch my toes. And, you know,
there's hope for me yet then.
It does, you know, it is possible, but it's not a metric of success. There's no kind of real metric in yoga. It's a personal practice where it's about experiencing things in our own body and not kind of thinking about positions as being, this is the right position, this is the wrong position. There is no right or wrong, really. So the benefits for me, beyond the obvious things, which people hear about all the time, I'm sure, is yoga allowed me to learn how to take control over my nervous system and regulate my nervous system. Now, obviously that sounds a contradictory thing to say, especially to the idea of the nervous system, especially what's called the autonomic nervous system, is that it doesn't need our intervention. It happens all by itself. So we have what's called the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. The sympathetic means essentially fight, flight, and freeze, and the parasympathetic stands for rest and digest. Now, throughout the day, we utilize both of these to one extent or the other. But what can happen quite often with chronic pain and a chronic illness, it can develop chronic stress as a byproduct. So that can be from emotional feelings that develop into physiological stress. It could be just feeling stressed in the body because there's pain and there's tension around that. So when I first came to yoga, I was very much in a fighting state. I wanted to fight the condition. I wanted to fight everything.
I think that's a very common reaction at the start.
It is a very common reaction. And still now, all over the internet, I hear kind of this warrior mentality around arthritis. Now, that definitely can serve a purpose. But what I came to realize was fighting is exhausting. And fighting in a war against yourself, or in my case, myself, didn't make any sense. I realized that the way to actually take the pressure off was to kind of put down my sword, as it were, and begin to learn how to connect back with my body and not fight against my body, but instead work with my body. And that's really what yoga helped me to do. And that then brought me on to lots of other, you know, physical practices, lots of other non-physical practices that have helped me along the way.
It's really interesting to hear, because I had fallen into the trap that so many people do of just putting yoga in a kind of flexibility, physical fitness box in my head, and I'd never really considered the wider impact. So that's definitely something to think about. But you've come from quite a different background, haven't you? So tell me a bit about being a competitive skateboarder. I can't imagine that was a lot like yoga.
No, although there's definitely similarities, although they could seem far-fetched. I'm still skateboarding now. There was about 4 or 5 years where I couldn't skate at all. I had 2 years of about no skateboarding whatsoever, and then slowly started to try and skate again, and now back skateboarding. I started skateboarding since about the age of 9 years old, so it's something I'd been doing for over half my life.
Yeah.
And it was kind of everything to me in terms of my identity. It was one of the one things I was good at growing up as a teenager. I was not very well behaved at school. I was, you know, had issues at home and all the rest of it, but skateboarding was the one thing that I excelled at, I loved, and I was very disciplined and passionate about. So it was a huge part of, I guess, my life. And it was a real blow when originally I was diagnosed, because the big fear, the first question I asked my rheumatologist was, can I keep skateboarding? And, you know, at the time she responded, I don't see why not. But then over the years, I had a lot of healthcare professionals telling me not to do it, and the reasons why I shouldn't do it. And that kind of led me into a kind of darkness, as it were. And
at some point I had to stop because the pain was too much. But I'm very, very grateful now that I'm back skateboarding, and it's brilliant. I love it.
So as somebody who was doing a different, possibly less recommended in inverted commas, sport also at the time that they got diagnosed, was there any confusion or expectation from your doctors at the time that rather than being arthritis, it would just be a skateboarding injury that you would have to get through and then you would be fully recovered? Did you kind of encounter those sorts of challenges?
Absolutely. So when I was 14, I started getting pain. And actually, when I reflect back, it was from about the age of 12, I was experiencing fatigue. I'd come home from school and just sleep for hours. But I had quote unquote skateboarding injuries from the age of about 14. I had issues on and off. The thing is, they were injuries. I did have injuries. I fell on my hip all the time. Most skateboarders have like a area they fall on more predominantly, because when you fall, you learn to fall in a specific way, but then you kind of have this repetitive impact. So it was always my hip. And funnily enough, AS tends to, or any form of axial spondyloarthritis for the most part, starts in the sacroiliac joint. So it kind of looked similar, right? And it was only when I got to about the age of 18 and I saw an orthopedic surgeon and they said, you've got hip bursitis. And I said, no, I don't. I need to see a rheumatologist. And it's a bit of a blur. I can't remember at what point I realized that it wasn't purely mechanical, that there was an inflammatory component. But when I saw the rheumatologist, it didn't take long for me to get diagnosed with axial spondyloarthritis. So, yeah.
I mean, that in itself is good news that it didn't take too long, although obviously it's not a diagnosis that anybody wants to hear. But what persuaded you to keep going and keep pushing for a diagnosis? Where did you find the resilience to keep on pushing through that and through the pain and to get the answers that you needed?
Well, there'd been symptoms for about 4 years at that point, and it was kind of a case of just feeling like there was something not right.
Yeah.
And I went to physios, and I remember seeing one physio regularly, and she was nearly brought to tears because she was like, I don't know why this isn't helping. And, you know, people aren't really trained across the board. Some people, and it is improving, there is less of a delay to diagnosis, although it's definitely not anywhere it could be. And the reason I kept pushing, I guess, was just, it wasn't really something conscious, to be honest. It was just something that I did. Maybe it's my temperament. I've always asked questions. I've always questioned things. It's just something in my nature to question things. And when you're experiencing something in your own body and it's not improving or it's getting worse, you definitely question things. And I think I was just fortunate. I don't really know where this idea of rheumatology came from. It just came from somewhere, though, and I can't recall where. I don't feel like there was much conscious effort in terms of that. It just happened.
And what about when you did get the diagnosis in the end? It sounds from reading your blog like you did the same as me and went down the kind of bad news rabbit hole. You've talked about believing that your mobility would only get worse and it was a one-way track you were on. What was it that pulled you up out of that?
So I think it was hitting such a low point gives you kind of two choices, and that's what happened to me when I went online and looked at all of these articles and Facebook forums. Luckily, nowadays there are more positive places out there, like Arthur's Place and like what we do, where it's more of a supportive community. But when I was going online, it was just super dark and really scary and felt very lonely and isolated. So it led me to this point of real darkness where I was at the point where I almost couldn't see a way out. And I think it was at that point there was a still small voice in my head just saying, what's next? You know? And I think that's really what gets people through very dark times. Is it's not that I found a solution or I knew there was some magical thing that would happen. It's just I had the ability to ask the question, what's next? And that gets you, I guess, back up on your feet. And then obviously from there, a series of events happened which turned the what's next into here's where to start, and then you go on a different trajectory. And I think that's really how I came out of that point, I would say.
And how do you think it's best to go about looking for that starting point? I'm very aware that we will probably have podcast listeners who have been very recently diagnosed and are in a similar place, and I don't want any of them to think that Googling or looking for information isn't the right thing to do, because obviously you do whatever you need to cope in the moment. But at the same time, if they're looking to take a more positive step now, where would you recommend they start?
So I'm going to answer this question in two ways. One is there's people out there that have been diagnosed with arthritis for some time. And I always believe that in life, there are people who are a few steps ahead of us that have a lot of wisdom to share about those few steps, and to really encourage people to be open and share those experiences in a way that empowers people. I would never recommend people sharing medical advice to others, but giving out and being open to the idea of just sharing the things that have helped people along the way is a really helpful thing to do. And also not just literal things that have helped people, but also the kind of emotional side of things and the process of beginning to get to grips with a diagnosis of any form of arthritis. And then to flip the question back for people who are newly diagnosed is to take it one step at a time. And I love this quote. It's Rome wasn't built in a day, but Rome also didn't decay in a day. It took years and years for Rome to fall. And it can be quite similar with our health. If we've been given a diagnosis, we can't rebuild things instantly. We can't recover a better quality of life and get to a point where things are better than it is instantly. In the same way that instantly things won't decay, you know, in a day or 2 days. But if we can take things one day at a time and focus on doing everything we can on that day to be compassionate to ourselves, to not put too much pressure on ourselves to fix things and find solutions, that's a huge step in recovering a better quality of life, because you're already taking a lot of the physiological stress off the diagnosis. And we know that stress can lead to pain, pain can lead to stress, and it's a vicious cycle. So that's I think a really important point, is taking it one day at a time. And I think when I was diagnosed, I had this idea of like, I'm gonna do everything all at once, I'm gonna do everything I can to fix this, I'm going to fix this, I'm going to find a cure. And it was like, it was like throwing everything at it. Now, I think maybe sometimes people have to go through that process. Maybe I needed to go through that process. But what would have been more helpful is just start with one thing, because there's so much components to our health. And, you know, we can just start with one thing. For example, what's my sleep hygiene like? Am I looking at my phone late at night? Like, that's a tiny thing, but a good night's sleep, or a night's sleep that's better than it had been, would have helped me feel less overwhelmed. And then the next day, okay, how much am I getting outside a day? Can I get some morning sunlight? Okay, next thing, what's my hydration like? Okay, next thing, what's my nutrition like? Okay, next thing, what's my social connections? Do I feel isolated? How can I build more social connection? Okay, next thing, what can I do physically? And then, of course, you know, working with other healthcare professionals like rheumatologists, and you kind of build on that. And that way it's less overwhelming than trying to do everything at once. I would say that that would be the thing I would have given myself advice to back then.
So don't fight all your battles in one go. So it sounds like you have found mindset to be really linked to how you feel physically, and it's obvious from the things that you've talked about that there is basis for that in a lot of the way that thinking about yoga takes place. How important is having a positive outlook to you? Is that something you actively strive for, or is that just now a product of everything else that you've been able to put in place?
I think the idea of what positive outlook, it can mean many different things. For me, it doesn't mean sunshine and rainbows. What it means is the attitude of allowing. And it's a practice. It's something that no one is perfect at, including myself. But if something happens, let's say one day wake up and there's lots of fatigue, instead of going, ah, I love fatigue, sunshine and rainbows, it's instead going, okay, well, this is what I'm experiencing. First thing I'm going to do is do the best I can to allow it to be as it is and not try and force it out of my life. But the next thing I'm going to do is say, what now? What next? And then I'll tap into a toolbox of things that I can do to improve that situation. I mentioned earlier, I'll do something called non-sleep deep rest, which is a form of deep relaxation. Sometimes people call it yoga nidra, and it trains the body into a state similar to deep sleep. It has a very rejuvenating effect, and I'll do that on a day where there's lots of fatigue. So it's an attitude of allowing and then finding solutions and being active in those solutions. That's for me what a positive outlook means. It doesn't mean happy-go-lucky. It means being able to have a combination of acceptance or allowing and simultaneously be able to put one step in front of the other.
You talked of the idea of not battling against arthritis and not trying to fight it off. Is there, in that sense of acceptance, almost a sense of this is a known enemy that you know how to tackle and you know what it will respond to?
I would probably push back on enemy, because the enemy being the body that we inhabit, for me, doesn't make sense. So I would probably think about it more so as arthritis isn't who I am. It's something that the body can experience, and that experience may impact the mind, it may impact our emotions, but it's not something that we are internally fighting against, at least as a way to look at it. Because again, like waging war against ourselves, or even trying to accept that there's an enemy inside us, I think, in my opinion, does more harm than good. I've spoken to students who, when they were diagnosed, their arthritis was described as a gorilla that's trying to attack them inside their own body. Now, as an image, you know, maybe that is quite a kind of comical sounding thing, but it's actually very scary. And I think when it comes to arthritis, the current model is that it's something to try to fight. And I think it's a case of understanding that everything in our body is doing its best. Even if we're talking about inflammatory arthritis, think of it more as a overcaring mother that's trying to do too much, because that's really what happens with the immune system. The immune system thinks there's a foreign threat and then will be overreactive. And in fact, it's about understanding that maybe it's a mother that can be too kind of over the top and a bit overbearing, and it's being able to say, okay, I understand why you feel this way, but I'm going to try to do the best I can to calm you down. That would be my perspective, I would say, if that makes sense.
I really like that analogy. I've never thought of that before, but I really like it. So we do see a lot in the media, for example, about the struggle against arthritis, the fight that people face with it. How much do you think that is a useful discourse for people who are diagnosed themselves?
So for people who are diagnosed themselves, I don't think it's a particularly useful discourse in the long term. For the media and for spreading awareness, I understand its usefulness, because people tend to be more engaged in a fight, just in general. It's human nature.
Yeah, everybody runs to the playground, don't they, when they hear the chant?
Exactly. And so, you know, I wouldn't want to say that's not get any value, because it definitely does in terms of being able to help to raise awareness. But for people living with arthritis, it can help kickstart the journey of working to recover a better quality of life. And many people, I'm sure, go down that journey. Myself included, I was on the front line of the battle, you know. I was raging war, and it did provide energy, but it didn't last, and I realised it was causing me a lot of stress, and it was counterintuitive and didn't make sense for me, at least.
So it has a place, but it's possibly not the whole story. And I suppose that's what we're trying to do on the podcast, to show the many different ways and means of managing this. So with that in mind, my final question for you today, Jamie, and it's a big one. All of this discussion that we've had about mindset and about the way that you perceive your arthritis specifically, how does this all link to yoga?
So this is all yoga, really. The philosophy and traditions of yoga talk about the importance of allowing things to be. It talks about the importance of finding balance, the importance of not fighting against things that are actually counterintuitive. People think perhaps yoga is this kind of thing of being up in the Himalayas in a cave, and the thing is, even the ancient kind of traditions of yoga talk about the fact of still doing and being a person of this world, and being able to have these understandings of attitudes towards life. But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't engage in life. It doesn't mean we shouldn't do everything we can to live a good and full life. So I guess all of these things, what I'm saying is to kind of back down and not fight, but in fact it's the opposite. It's reserve energy by working with the body and learning to love and cherish the body, and then use the energy we have to think about solutions, to think about contributing to the world, but also doing the best we can to live a good full life despite the challenges, despite the hurdles that life can bring. That's all yoga, that's all rooted in the philosophies. And I think the biggest thing is, and what's very helpful from my perspective, is being of service and helping to build community and friendship and connection with other people is a huge part of learning to live a full life despite this diagnosis.
Thank you very much, Jamie, for your time today. You've certainly challenged the way I think about some things, and I'm going to definitely try to be more mindful about certain aspects of my own thought patterns going forward. And I'm sure that the listeners to the Arthur's Heroes podcast will find what you've said absolutely fascinating. Just one final thing before I let you go. If anybody wants to find out more about Yoga for AS, where can they do that?
YogaForAS.com. You can learn everything on there. As an organisation, we specialise in spondyloarthritis or axSpA ankylosing spondylitis, but we also work with people with psoriatic arthritis. And by the way, I've realised I keep pronouncing, and I have done since I was diagnosed, arthritis as arthritis, like Arthur. And it's something that I'm just trying to stop doing, because it's really funny when I listen back to me saying arthritis and pronouncing it wrong. So anyway, that's a side note. So yogafreyas.com, we've got a community there of people living with the condition where you can connect with people all over the world who live with arthritis. And we offer live classes. We offer a virtual yoga library of 20 courses, all specifically modified for arthritis. And it's open to all forms of arthritis. You can reach out, ask questions. I've done specific training in other forms of arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, etc. So it's open to everyone. We welcome everyone. You can explore. We've got a whole page of free resources. You can try everything out as well. Live classes, you can try out the virtual library and just get involved. We welcome everyone with open arms.
Thank you very much, Jamie, for your time today.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Arthur's Heroes. For more podcasts, information, and access to loads of great content for young adults with arthritis, please visit arthursplace.co.uk. You can also find other young adults to chat to in the Arthur's Place social Facebook group. Follow Arthur's Place on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and find out more about Codeword Pineapple, the pin badge for people with an invisible disability, at codewordpineapple.org.uk. Thank you to Novartis UK for their support in the production of this podcast.